For April 26th, 2019, we talk about the Assassin's Creed Unity giveaway, Risk of Rain 2, and we ask you about fourth wall breaking games. Welcome to Level 282. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Spuria.
I'm David Meismith.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much, everybody, for being patient with us being off last week. I was in Milwaukee for the Midwest Gaming Classic. More accurately, when we would have recorded, I would have just been getting home from a 7.5-hour drive.
Slacker.
yeah, that would have been a bit much, but it was a good show. I liked it quite a bit. Our live panel went good. The meetups were good. Lots of people came out. I would like name specific people who came out, but I would feel bad for not remembering everybody. So, no, it was a good time as always. Yeah.
Good.
And that's pretty much been, I've just been recovering from that. Thankfully, I went out there kind of sick, so I didn't get con crud, which is good.
You went out there sick, so you didn't get con crud.
So what happened was, like, I went out there with like a minimal amount of sinus weirdness, but I think that took the place of whatever crud I would have otherwise gotten. Yeah. So, you know, I was taking sinus medicine and, you know, using Purell, and it, you know, I just was fine. I was good by most of the way through the weekend, but I think that stopped me from getting apocalyptic crud like I got last fall, if you remember how bad that was. So,
yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah. Dennis, it's been a bit since you've been on. What you been up to?
Mostly enjoying spring for all it's worth. It is super nice out.
My sources tell me that it has sprung.
It has indeed sprung. And it has sprang, though, other sources say. Mm-hmm. So we've got to look up the correct form of that. Anyway, been outside a lot. One, playing with the kiddos. Got them some new backyard toys.
Yeah.
A climbing dome and such. So that's been a lot of fun. It's the like holes in it are small enough for them to really easily dash through, but I can't easily get in. So that is like instantly their fort, and I'm chasing them around the outside of it, and they're zipping in and out and over and through. So that is a ton of fun.
I'm just saying that seems like that was poorly planned on your part.
Yeah. Crap. Now they have a place to plan. No broken arms as of yet. So clearly we're not trying hard enough.
Or they're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. but then I've also been outside, training for the Flying Pig Half Marathon.
Oh yeah. It's coming up
soon. Which is coming up in 2 weeks. Yeah.
Oof. So you're learning how to fly, presumably.
Yes. They tell me that's cheating, but I tell them, to just ignore the jet. And I'll be fine.
All they say is 26 ish miles. They don't say exactly where.
Yeah. Or how.
Right. It
doesn't say in the rule book that a pig can't run a marathon. So
yeah, I'm quite clear how that'll help, but yeah, we're still workshopping it.
You won riding pigs. It's amazing. They are some of your more athletic mammals for their size. I understand. No, that's not even remotely true, but yeah, all the nice weather has facilitated that.
I mean, I know they'll eat anything, so there's that.
Well, it's them and can. Them and cans. Them and goats. Whatever. Get rid of bodies for you.
Yeah, I mean, I figure, you know, I feel like it's a mixed bag. You know, people talk about, like, oh, they're one of the only animals that that will practice cannibalism. But mm-hmm. I feel like if you were made out of bacon, you would probably practice cannibalism.
Can I introduce you to the concept of long pig?
Yeah, upsetting. Hey, I'm going to add Ben to the call. Hey, Ben, I forgot about the newly agreed upon start time, and I forgot to add you in. So welcome. Welcome to the show in progress. We're just in the banter.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just talking about Dennis's Dennis's new jungle gym that he got for his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It has been pretty fantastic so far.
Nice. Yeah. No.
Ben, how is your jungle gym?
You know, I haven't added that to my apartment yet. I got a rug for my apartment, but not a jungle gym yet.
Your priorities are so out of whack.
Yeah.
I agree. I need to have kids so that I focus on the right priorities.
Oh. Technically not. You know, you just go for
Oh,
it.
yeah, no. Yeah, get an adult jungle gym.
I guess there's less competition that way, yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I think that's called a sex swing, but I don't know if that's a.
I was going to go that direction, but I didn't want to.
And then
you went there, so we're fine. How's it going, Ben?
Good.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's a lot of transitions going here between sex swings and jungle gyms. So.
I was getting away from that pretty quick, wasn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, it's good to have you back. Any cool Seattle stories?
It's very rainy. I walked back in the rain to my apartment just now. Oh, it's been rainy all week. But apparently it's supposed to be really nice the entire summer, so we'll see when that comes around.
It'll be a good reprieve from the surface of the sun, aka Austin, I think.
Yeah, that's fair too. Yeah.
Yeah, see, I always like the idea or subscribe to the idea that that's why the rain is why Seattle has such a thriving like beer scene.
I mean, that's not too far off. That's what they say about like Wisconsin.
Michigan.
Yeah, Wisconsin, yeah. Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's why they're big drinking places. Yeah.
Yeah, I know the places that do the whole like for part of the year it's just night all the time have crazy high instances of alcoholism and stuff.
Yeah, like up in Norway and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. How's it going, David?
You know, living the dream.
Cool. Yeah.
I really have very, very little banting type stuff. I got some new stick fighting gloves, so that's a thing.
What makes a glove specifically for stick fighting?
They're basically like hockey gloves, but somewhat higher armored, particularly on the sides, because unlike hockey, people are, you know, explicitly trying to hit you in the hand in stick fighting.
Right. It seems like a winning strategy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of one of the main targets. So
yeah,
any nun will tell you that.
Any nun will tell you that. There's still what? The scene from Blues Brothers with the nun and the ruler. Probably my favorite scene in the movie, and one of the few movie scenes that is actually more funny in the censored version.
can you give a quick rundown of why of how they censored it?
Well, basically, you know the thing, like, you know, he, you know, says some curse word and she slaps him, and you know his response is, you know, damn it, you know, and so she slaps the other guy, and you know it goes back and forth, and she's just beating the crap out of him.
Yeah.
But in the censored version, they simply remove all the cursing.
Oh, God.
So all she's just of a sudden, beating you see the nun just flip out on him unprovoked.
Just beating the living daylights out
it's
of
like
these kids.
It's like a Gandhi nun.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I think that's everybody's banter, I think. A little bit of a programming note at the start here. So because of, you know, obviously scheduling differences, we're going to be changing up the show a little bit. Do not worry. It's not going to be changing too substantially, but because we have to start later in the evening, we're choosing to start later in the evening, we're going to shorten the show just a little bit. To accomplish this, starting next week, we're going to be shifting things around. The order of the show is going to go The Grind, talking about what we've been playing, probably limiting the number of games to the most prominent thing. Then we're going to do the multiplayer. And then instead of the brief where we talk about, you know, generally any news, we're going to do almost like what we used to do way back in the beginning, like the end boss, where instead of just bringing like, hey, this is something that's happening, what I want to do is like say, hey, we bring something that's like, oh, this is something exciting.
Right. So basically nothing has changed. We'll you know, ramble about something completely unrelated to any given news story.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're just changing where we start trailing off at.
Right, right. Yeah. So, and just to you know, talk about this, like, I would like to, you know, what's probably going to happen from this is we are going to take the episodes from being about an hour, or two hours and 15 minutes to an hour and 45. Right.
Challenge accepted.
and that'll be for us. So if it ends up not working out for us, we will reevaluate, but that currently is the plan. So all the same stuff, more or less, but we're going to do it in a different order, and hopefully it's all gonna work out cool. Yeah, it's awkward.
So what you can do is set your podcast to half speed, and you can actually extend the length of the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've never understood why there is a half speed setting. Like, what podcast are people listening to on half speed?
If it's not a language you speak natively, probably.
Oh, but have you ever tried it?
No.
David's
trying to say something.
Oh, sorry.
But he's trying to say something at 1x speed, yeah. So I don't know.
So I know for video, I use like the slow speeds on YouTube all the time for martial arts videos when I'm trying to figure out combinations that someone's using or something like that.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
I could also see using it if you're doing like piano tabs or musical tabs or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Not on a podcast though.
Yeah, I take your point about the vocal distortion, but I would counter and say it also sounds really weird when you do like 1.5x speed or 2x. Like, it has a similar kind of like compressing kind of effect that I think people just kind of put up with, to get the effect, right? You know, to make it go faster. I think if somebody's listening, if somebody is listening to something in a foreign language, it probably benefits to hear it more slowly, and the benefit of hearing it more slowly outweighs the bummer of hearing it all distorted. Like,
your mind probably quickly learns to even out the weirdness, just like, you know, you know, watching a movie at 60 frames versus 30. Like, there's something different, but you figure out how to watch it.
Right, right.
How to parse it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Plus, you need it so people can play Radiohead songs slowed down on YouTube.
No, yeah.
let me go on the record. I am fine with YouTube half speed. I understand that. It's the podcast half speed I got to take issue with.
Yeah.
Also, I hate that I have to go through half speed if I want to get around from 2x back to normal.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Do you listen to stuff sped up?
I do. Yeah. Okay. I do.
I'll do it with audiobooks when I'm cramming them, but yeah.
Yeah, audiobooks are like that, or there are just certain shows where it's like I'm the content that I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, but like, you know, the content is more important than the conversation porn.
Yeah.
So I'm like I just get the facts into my brain.
There's no comic timing that needs to be preserved.
Yes.
Yeah. There you
go. Just the facts, podcast, ma'am.
Yeah, any sort of tutorial type video, I default to 1.5 and try and do 2x.
Yeah, yeah.
The one I this is either just not surprising or very I don't know, ironic or something. The videos I do tend to watch on 2x is when I'm trying to learn some martial arts stuff, and that martial arts stuff is Tai Chi.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
it's especially frustrating when, like, I'm just, you know, I'm learning a new form, and so I'm just need to review, like, what goes when, because it's like, all right, yes, I see what you're doing. I know what the next step is. Get on with it.
Right, right. I literally just need a list of what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll do, like on YouTube, I'll do double X, or as fast as I can to look at playthroughs of games for Abject Suffering, like to see where they go after I stop, you know?
Mm. Yeah. No, that's smart.
Yeah, yeah.
I know some people, also do stuff like that with, reading. We'll do, like, you know, have, apparently for, like, ebooks, there's people have made software where they'll just do, like, one word at a time but just like flashed on your screen super fast.
Yeah, for, like, that's like a it's a speed reading training thing. Just to get your basically to train you to break your internal monologue is what that does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
See, I don't know. I feel like that would just somehow break my ability to read.
Well, you know, you become unstuck in time is the thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
Oh, okay, we're wrapping up this conversation, so everyone, you can come out at 2x speed.
Yeah. The second you hear the stinger for the brief. Yeah. So I just wanted to get that out because we've been talking about doing this for a little while, and I do not want to spring it on you out of nowhere. Yeah. So, how do you all feel about getting started? For one last time, at least for now, for old time's sake, why don't we do the regular kind of show with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and in its proper spot, we're going to talk about first
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis, I want to hear about this story, I don't even know how to how to bring it in. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, so obviously something very sad happened in the past week, architecturally, mm-hmm. where the Notre Dame Cathedral burned down largely.
Right.
And you know, if you haven't seen that in the news, congratulations, I guess. You must have been actively trying to avoid it.
Right.
But, you know, this kind of monument and losing it is very sad. But Assassin's Creed, specifically Assassin's Creed Unity, is set in Revolutionary era France and has a very detailed model of the Notre Dame Cathedral in it.
A developer, they had one guy who was kind of in charge of that. It took him 2 years to do it.
It's a feat. Not nearly as much of a feat as the real thing, but even a video game model of the Notre Dame Cathedral is a feat. So that tells you what a feat the actual thing is, right?
Mm-hmm. The people that made Notre Dame also probably slept. So, you know, you got to take some points away from them.
Lazy.
I know. They could have done so much more. Yeah. But so Ubisoft made Assassin's Creed Unity free with the objective of, hey, everyone, just come into this game world and you can see a very lifelike rendition of the cathedral if you haven't been able to experience it before. Mm-hmm. And obviously, there's been plenty of funds raised to rebuild it, although it'll never be the same again.
Right.
So this was a really cool way for people to kind of come and experience the way it was. So that's really cool. They also kicked in 500,000 euros towards rebuilding efforts, which is also cool. And the internet responded in a very internet way by review bombing. We're good.
Yeah. So review bombing, usually when chuds find out that a woman worked on a game, they will go and give it negative reviews, regardless of its content. Just to make a point. This is the other side of that. They said, hey, you know what? Maybe didn't really play this game. If I did, I maybe didn't like it based on the reviews or et cetera, but this is laudable.
Yeah, this is worth giving kudos to.
Yeah.
So the community kind of swarmed this game with positive feedback, Unity, Assassin's Creed Unity, was not exactly super well received in its launch period, and so the reviews were mixed, but that's bumped it up to very positive in recent reviews, with just a ton of people coming in and saying what a cool thing this is, and you know, just being very positive on the action of the developer outside of the game. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I think Steam's policy is if reviews go negative in a certain way, they will send a notification to the developer, and then I think the developer gets the choice as to whether or not to jettison recent reviews. So I'm wondering if there is, like, if they even built that system to send a form email to Ubisoft, like, do you want to jettison these reviews?
Yeah. This was going to be, I wasn't necessarily going to do a Debbie Downer kind of thing. Like, this is still, I mean, yes, it is powered by positivity and is heartwarming. This is still messing with, like, the intended system for letting people know if this game is good or not.
Yeah.
Like I just there are any number of ways that all these people could show their support for this move that do not involve them going in and messing with this. It's, you know, it's hard to get mad at it because it is, you know, it is good PR, right? It's
if I have to live in a world of review bombings, I want it in this form versus the other.
Yeah.
And you know, it is like I said, the most internet way you could possibly respond to the gesture from the developer.
Yeah. I tagged your car. But I just wanted to let you know in spray paint on the factory coat that you're doing good and people love you.
I drew the happiest penis on your arm.
Twitter contest, draw us the happiest penis. No, don't.
No. This would make me very happy. I've deleted my account. So an interesting thing, a very internet thing, but also if you're interested in a weird but probably one of the better ways to experience the Notre Dame Cathedral, this is a way to go do it.
And to be fair, the cathedral is still there.
I'll be very interested to see what happens with, like, do you just try to replicate it as close as you can? Do you go, there's a church called Old St. George that burnt down in Cincinnati, and they kind of redid it in a very modern way that's also cool, but notably different than kind of the history it's built on top of. So there's it'll be interesting to see where they go with this.
I think the analysis I heard that I think made the most sense to me is basically point out that this isn't more any more destroyed than when, say, it was bombed in World War II.
Mm-hmm. Well, very fair.
Yeah.
And just the point is, like, 300-year-old, however many year old buildings aren't relevant because they're unchanged. They're relevant because of the changes that did happen to them.
Yeah. You know,
I just say this is an opportunity to build in all those secret passageways and entrances and drop points that Assassin's Creed Unity actually has.
Yeah. I mean, so I fell off of the series a little bit, but I've been planning to make a revisit to it at some point here. But that is something that has always been the highlight, is these recreations of historical spaces. I mean, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood is really good. It's my favorite of those games that I've played so far, but like absolutely the best thing is running around Renaissance Rome, you know?
Oh, I still remember the Duomo shortly after visiting it in real life and just being amazed at, like, oh no, I walked on this section of the roof and this is like very faithful.
Yeah.
And you always, if you haven't been there, you always kind of have that skepticism of like, this is probably glazed over pretty well. But then to actually see how faithful it was, knowing firsthand, just kind of brought a new level of awe to that, but also to everything else that they've done.
I'm really curious with, I feel like Unity is Assassin's Creed, the one you didn't even know existed.
A lot of people, is the one that all those crazy eyeball memes were about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see, like, how do they handle Assassin's Creed in a at a time period when, you know, viable modern guns existed?
That's a thing. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if the thing is you getting shot.
Yeah, well, you know. I haven't played that. I haven't played the Unity or Syndicate. Both of those are relatively modern day. Yeah. Not, I mean, yeah, in the scheme of the series.
I just assume he shoots his wrist blades now.
Nice. The scorpion grappling hook.
I know Odyssey is apparently amazing or whatever.
Yeah. Odyssey is apparently really good. Origins, like, apparently it's back, baby. And those are the ones that I'm looking at getting back into.
My understanding is that the secret sauce was just removing assassins from Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, maybe they also didn't really concern themselves too much with the backstory, but I can't speak to that. I can't speak to that with authority because I haven't played it. Ben, what is going on with Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order?
That
game has too many titles, but what doesn't it have?
So the big news is they released a trailer for this, I think, within the last couple weeks. They released it at the Celebration, Star Wars Celebration. Even though I guess that's in anticipation for the Star Wars movie coming out in December. Usually it made more sense being around now because it would be right before the movie comes out. But anyway, that
why
aside,
is it not on May the 4th?
That's another weird thing too, I guess. I don't know. These are all valid questions. I don't have answers to those, but I have answers to other things. One of which is this game. When does it come out? It comes out November 15th, which is the day after my birthday. So it's kind of like a birthday present. But
for the next year, right? We can wait a whole year and get it for you for your next birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine. it's a single player standalone game. There's not going to be a multiplayer in it, which is odd since it's Respawn Entertainment and they've up until now made really good multiplayer games. So that's interesting. And the big news too, is that they said that there's going to be no, like microtransactions or anything like that in the game. So they're kind of trying to make this in the same vein as like God of War, where it's like standalone, good game, not trying to get money out of you necessarily, but just a quality game, hopefully.
Joke's on you. They're adding macro transactions.
It's the Air Bud rule, I guess. So, yeah, but the trailer looks good. It's set right after episode 3, I think. The premise is your Jedi Padawan who didn't finish your training because everyone died, and so you're kind of like in hiding. But kind of like the Knights of the Old Republic games, they're like adding new planets to it and kind of building some culture into it. So I think it looks good. We'll see. I'll probably wait until first day reviews or whatever before getting it, but I don't know. It could be a step in the right direction. Bring us back to the glory days of Knights of the Old Republic.
Is this the one that Amy Hennig was like famously kicked off of?
That got canceled. I think that was like a EA game, I think, and I forget what the title of that one was. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just
many other Star Wars games that got canceled.
Yeah, there were just a whole bunch of kind of stories that came out saying like, yeah, you know, the failure of these studios to put out any kind of single player Star Wars game kind of has to do with the fact that single player games are on the way out, or at least that is the perception at larger publishers like EA. So to find out that Respawn is going to get this chance, and remember, Respawn made Titanfall 2, which is an amazing single-player game.
And they more or less made Modern Warfare 2, which was an amazing multiplayer game and a decent single-player game.
Yeah. They've got a...
Aren't they like a pseudo-indie whatever, or are they owned by someone?
I think EA owned... I forget. I don't know. They used to be... Yep, no, I have no idea. Yep, fart.
Yeah. Frantic googling. They're owned by Electronic Arts. Okay. It's the parent organization.
Yeah, and that's why I think that's why Apex Legends is on Origin, right? It's because of that.
Yeah. You know. Oh yeah, that is another thing about the game is it's on PC. It's only being released through Origin, but they're releasing it on console as well. So I'm gonna play it on that.
Yeah.
Man, the like fuck Steam momentum has picked up exponentially.
It's good. It's good that they have competition. You know.
It's similar to the Netflix.
If by competition pattern. You mean paying people off to not have competition, then yeah, they have competition. You know,
that's we've talked about it before. Yeah, what were you gonna say, Ben?
I said it's similar to like the what's going on with Netflix right now, where it's everyone's like, no, we're gonna make our own thing and have our own content on it, so we can make a bunch of money too. But then since everybody's doing it now, no one's gonna make money anymore.
Right? People are just gonna go with what they know. Especially because most of those other things are being described as the Netflix of blank. It's Disney's Netflix. It's so-and-so's Netflix. And, you know.
The only way to win is to pirate to play.
I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would endorse that.
Or business mergers. Let's do that. Let's get more monopolies.
Ooh, consolidate, my friend. let's see here. I've got a story. This is a patented coal thing is happening. I forget, have I talked about or have I brought the Castlevania Anniversary Collection to the show yet?
I don't think so.
Not to my memory.
Okay. This is something strange that was announced, and there were not an awful lot of details about it. But here just recently, we have details. So the full roster of games to be included in the Castlevania Anniversary Collection has been announced, and it's a bunch of weirdos. Especially because the, you know, just for years and years, for almost two decades now, Castlevania has been synonymous with, you know, Symphony of the Night and those kind of open, you know, Metroid like experiences. But this, you know, relatively high profile retro re-release doesn't have any of those. It has the first four Castlevania games. And then some real weirdos, Castlevania Bloodlines, Kid Dracula, and then Castlevania the Adventure, along with Castlevania II Belmont's Revenge. So like a bunch of stuff from the pre Symphony of the Night era being brought out. And that is cool because those games are good and cool. I'm not going to speak to or vouch for the Game Boy ones because those are kind of lame. It is going to be neat to have a reliable way to play Castlevania 3. And I'm real curious if they're going to bring over the Famicom music or if it's going to be the NES music.
Yeah. Speak to me about Kid Dracula, the one game on this list that does not have Castlevania in the title.
Kid Dracula is a really weird game. So forgive me if I get any of these details incorrect. So Kid Dracula, it is a Game Boy port of I think it's like a Famicom game or something like that. But it was, you know, just like a kiddie, more simplified version of Castlevania. Let me see here. I can't find the actual name of it, but yeah, Kid Dracula. It is Game Boy version of that. It's kind of just what it sounds like. Like what if it was simpler, more cartoonish, and also on Game Boy. It's a real interesting game.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that's coming out for like PS4 and PC and stuff like that, but I don't know. Rock on for preservation's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll be curious about it because there are some of those that I haven't played. Like I've never really sat down with the Game Boy ones. I just know them by reputation.
And it's interesting that even though these are great for preservation, they will be like preservation is so fragmented on a macro scale. Like at a certain point there's got to be some kind of convergence. Maybe this is just ROMs I'm describing, but like there's all these official collections, but they're so fragmented that you can, you know, you only get 10 games at a time or what have you. Mm-hmm. That'll be hard to keep up with.
When I think about it, I just think of, you know, especially here recently when you just Nintendo cracked down on all those ROM sites. Like it is in everybody's interest if these games remain available to purchase in some form or fashion, just because, you know, you cannot necessarily count on easy accessibility on those kind of gray web channels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my story. Cool about Castlevania. I like Castlevania. Castlevania is good. Weird to see Konami doing stuff again. Like, my cat is on my lap and now she's gone. Okay. Hey David, you got a story?
You like Castlevania too?
Yeah. Yes and no. So my story inadvertently ended up kind of being folded into Dennis's story, but okay. Along with the fact that Assassin's Creed Unity has a incredibly lifelike recreation of Notre Dame, there's now some speculation that the research that went into building that actually could end up helping with the real world rebuilding of the cathedral.
That's cool.
Like did they go in there with like laser scans or something? Or
so I've heard mixed things. Apparently at the very least there was you know, relatively recently, a unrelated art historian that did incredibly detailed laser scans. It sounds like, though, the Ubisoft thing was maybe more in terms of, like, more, I don't know, like the aesthetic details of the building.
Yeah, so yeah, so like the reliefs and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I could see between the two, though, you know, them being able to, you know, really do, you know, do some preservation. And I think it's kind of interesting. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, proactively, you know, recording, you know, some of these historical works that inevitably are going to degrade.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially when after, you know, after what happened in Notre Dame, it just kind of basically came out that, like, a lot of the times the fire prevention plan at a place like that is don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Try not to fire.
Yeah. One of the hacker boards, that I read, you know, there's a person talking that was involved with, you know, some of the preservation, efforts beforehand, and was saying that, yeah, basically it's just, you know, made largely out of, you know, 400-year-old wood.
Yeah.
And so it's a thing where they've all, you know, they've already done everything they can to kind of prevent fires, but there's not really much you can do to actually stop them.
Yeah, yeah. It was like logistically, like gravity worked against the water cannons and stuff. Like, just,
yeah,
you know, we don't make things like that anymore. And so, you know, it doesn't make sense for a lot of our systems to be designed around those things. It goes to show you that we can have all of the, like, all of these digital recreations are fantastic and they're marvelous in their own right, but the majority, if not all, history is one of a kind, should be cherished.
I think the thing I can't understand, and maybe people have done this, but if not, I don't understand why not, is doing, like, you know, famous, like, recordings, you know, works of art, you know records, stuff like that. Why we aren't doing, like, electron scans of those?
I don't know. I don't know how to end that aside from saying go humanity, go history.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, you put this one up, so I will put it to you. What's the question you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked people to talk about their favorite way that a game has broken the fourth wall, knowing that everyone's legitimate first answer is Psychomantis. Let's just get that on the table.
Featured in the post that you put, the photo.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So plugging your controller into port number 2 to solve that puzzle and beat that boss. Amazing. Yeah. But there's been plenty of places where the fourth wall has been broken in games. They seem to be even more fond of it than most other mediums.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it.
Let's do it. So Ollie says, not sure if this is breaking the fourth wall, but I absolutely loved in Sands of Time how the prince would chide you with, no, that's not how it happened. And make you go back using the dagger when you died. Maybe one of my favorite gaming moments of all time when it first happened. Yeah.
Yeah, that one's pretty great. I feel like to argue whether that is like a storytelling convention or breaking the fourth wall, which is also a storytelling convention, is pretty pedantic. So I say that counts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it definitely calls attention to the idea that the player is a participant in unfolding the story. Even if it doesn't make that much sense from a narrative point of view, because if the prince is telling the story and saying, and then I attacked, and then I attacked, and then I blocked, and then I jumped over him. Hey, prince, learn how to conserve your detail. That's a shitty story.
You're such a great songwriter, but such a bad storyteller.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. but yeah, I think that counts. I think it does. And also, like, is he just like making mistakes in the way he tells the story and then going to correct himself?
Yeah. Oh, this is like 70-year-old him and he started to get Alzheimer's.
Oh no, that is so sad.
to be fair, at least it's not what Diablo 3, which just straight up pulled that one.
Oh no. Oh, Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, MGS4, please insert disc 2. Oh, that's right. You upgraded to a PS3. Absolutely, absolutely rolled when I heard that. MGS is the best in messing with your head.
That whole chapter, or that chapter in the beginning of the next one, between Otacon talking about the benefits of Blu-ray disc technology, and then the Psychomanta stand-in trying to do the same controller rumble trick on you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is kind of cheating because Lindsay, or because Dennis, you know, kind of opposed to the Psychomantis one at the beginning, but we'll allow
it. Yeah, I mean, MGS seems particularly fond of doing this.
Yes. Let's see here. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, gotta stick with another Metal Gear game. The series does that so well. Toward the end of the original Metal Gear game, the MSX version, when you're closing on Metal Gear itself, Big Boss tries to get you to abort the mission by telling you, "This is Big Boss, Solid Snake. Mission over. Return now. That's an order. Turn off the MSX." Nice breaking the wall way of selling the panic in Big Boss at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I also recall Metal Gear Solid 2 doing this at some point.
Did something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the creativity that goes into not just breaking the fourth wall, but then finding multiple ways to do it mm-hmm. in MGS is great.
Yeah, no, he's had decades to kind of play around with that. I'm curious if that will continue in Death Stranding or not.
Oh, yeah, it has to. Come on now.
Yeah.
How weird that game is, there's no way it doesn't.
Yeah.
He's going to find a way to break the fifth wall.
He's going to message all your friends with some kind of information. And you'll start getting texts of like, dude, are you okay?
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Warren say?
He says, since MGS is already taken, I'll go with Batman Arkham Asylum. You get drugged by a scarecrow, and it starts with your screen glitching like the game had crashed. Then the game's intro repeats, but with Batman and Joker swapped. It also tells you to use the middle stick to dodge a gunshot, yeah. Even though that doesn't exist. That's amazing. Yeah. I legitimately thought my PS3 crashed the first time it happened and rushed up to hard shut it down, only for it to happen again after loading my save.
that particular glitch. So it's very well executed. That is a wonderful thing that they did. But that particular way they did it was particularly, let's say, hateful, because the pattern that flashes up and the way the audio freezes is like specifically what would happen if your graphics card, kind of burnt out and glitched.
No.
Like, so I played that on Xbox 360 and it was shortly after, my system red ringed. And so I was like, oh no, not again. What's going on? Like, I just, my stomach just jumped up into my throat. I was like, oh, what are you doing? Why? I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. Well, fuck you guys for making me think.
Yeah. Just imagine being in like the cycle of shutting it down over and over. Like, yeah. What, someone out there did it like 10 plus times before realizing what was wrong.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So let's see here. Ben, what does Christopher say?
Yeah, Christopher says, in Fallout 2, there are so many lines from either your character or other random ones in the world where they all reference being in a game. Those are all real great. And then there is a picture, but I can't remember which one it says.
Yeah, yeah. So, somebody in the world says, no, not scripters, you moron. And then the only response that is available to you is, moron, I had to work hard to get the minimum 9 intelligence and perception to find this node. Anyway, you were saying? So in that instance, your character had a high enough intelligence score to see through the system. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, Fallout 2 is full of that stuff. God, that's a good game. David, what does David say?
David says, the first time I remember fourth wall breaking in a game was when one of Chrono Trigger's endings deposited you in a room with the developers. Huh. This does not hold a candle to the Metal Gear series, but I can't think of much others, and you said games specifically, so just mention Stephen King and leave it hanging.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that decision.
Cause a wheel.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, Dennis, what does Justin say?
He says, maybe not the best example in gaming, but it was easily my favorite part of Immortal Unchained. I just hope you guys have more to say about it than me.
Go listen to the Bonfireside chat about it. I specifically don't want to say too much because I do not want to spoil David.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has.
I went and watched a video of that, and it's an interesting concept.
It's so out of nowhere, and I love it. Yeah. let's see here. So that was all of the responses that we got there. Why don't we give our answers, and I will pull some free play questions from last time. And then we'll go on to talk about the grind stuff. So for me, one of the ones, like, I think that Undertale does a really good job with just integrating this into the entire experience. But to not do something that seems really obvious, a game called Pony Island. I've talked about it before, but the idea is like you fire up and play, play this really kind of simplistic pixel art game that's, supposed to be kiddie and whatever, but it is a game that is possessed by the devil, and he is taking you on this kind of like fourth wall breaking ride and, tormenting you and testing you through the game, primarily because he's bored and he wants to play. It's a really neat game, and I recommend people play it. But one of the little tricks, one of the little sanity effects that it does, is if you're playing it on Steam, it will pop up a Steam chat notification of somebody saying like, "I saw what you did." Or it's just like a random friend on your friend list, just like saying something like really accusatory or like vague about you.
Oh man.
It's like, oh no. And so like I think I legitimately like messaged somebody back saying like, what was that all about? I couldn't find your initial message. No, and then at some point somebody messaged me saying
friendships.
Somebody messaged me saying the same thing, and I was like, "Oh, were you playing Pony Island?" And they're like, "Yeah." I was like, "Yeah, that's something the game does." Yeah, I think that is mine for how convincing it is.
Nice.
Yeah, Ben, how about you?
I think I'll piggyback on like the Batman and just say Eternal Darkness did a really good job of doing that type of thing as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Eternal Darkness was the first one game I know of to do the sanity effect thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, I forget, somewhere on the website or in the manual or something, there's this bizarre, like, just paragraph long list of like, if you see any of this, please do not contact tech support.
Just spoiling it. Yeah, because they knew they would create problems for themselves. I mean, still to this day. I get people messaging me or tweeting me or something, either being confused by the sanity effects that I put into the Watch Out for Fireballs episode about Eternal Darkness, or mm-hmm. saying like, "Oh, you got me good with that. Like, I totally believed that my phone was ringing, etc." Just because I put sanity effects into that episode, because why wouldn't I?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Eternal Darkness is a good is a good choice. How about you, David?
So I think my overall favorite actually posted a screen capture of to the Slack. It was in the original Max Payne where you you get exposed to the, drugs that you're going after.
Mm-hmm.
And your character suddenly, realizes that he's in a game and starts monologuing about it.
And this is part of like a repeating series of scenes that are of like the same format. I was in I was blank, funny as hell. It was the most horrible thing I could think of. And like, that is the last one. And it is done in the super cheesy photographic motion graphic style of the game. Yeah. Incredibly good.
Yeah. Yeah. That, that whole thing is amazing. I feel like all of those games, even though it's probably not technically, fourth wall breaking, like the way they'll do the weird, like, let's have, random TV shows playing that, comment on what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Is kind of fun. The other honorable mention I'd like to throw out there for kind of player fourth wall breaking was the Matrix MMO. which was just entertaining because like any of the stuff that in a MMO would normally be out of character no longer is. So like you're like, nah, I can't go on the raid, I need to log out, can be entirely in character.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a weird game. I need to go read like an oral history of that so I can just get all of that concentrated.
Yep.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I just dropped mine into the Slack and can go in the show notes. But in Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Deadpool is one of the characters. And he has a fourth wall breaking attack where he beats his opponent to death with their own health bar, which is just delightful.
Yeah, and totally in character. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense for him. Yeah. There's also several quotes in that game where, like, depending on the enemy you defeat, Deadpool will trash talk in a certain way, or in one of them, he'll ask you as you're playing, like, were you recording that? You were recording that, right? Like, you're going to share that. Yeah. So pretty good stuff.
Nice. Cool. And that is all of those. I'll do the call to action at the end. Last week we did a free play, and you know, I want to pad this section out just a little bit. But free play is when we have you ask us questions. Going to get us started here with Casey, who says, if you could have any one arcade or pinball machine, assume you have the space for it and don't have to worry about maintenance, what one would you pick? For me, it would be Simpsons Pinball Party, which has possibly the most complicated rule sets of a pinball game of all time.
I know my answer to this, and I'm going to forget the table name, but we were in Portland on vacation and dropped into a pinball arcade like you do. Mm-hmm. Played a bunch of tables, and there was one that we were just like, oh my god, this is amazing. Like we had, this is far and away our favorite. So we were like, maybe we should, we liked it enough to like look it up online, and it wound up being like the number one rated pinball table on the whatever website it was.
Was it like Theater of Magic or something? Or
no, it was something with Castle and Medieval Siege.
Yeah.
Something like that. I'll give you the name shortly once I Google it. But it was validating, I guess, that your taste is also shared by the pinball community at large.
That's a good, that's a good feeling, actual right? When you say, oh, this is good and it's confirmed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm not crazy yet.
How about you, Ben?
My answer is like a cop-out. I would say like a MAME cabinet.
Oh, right? Yeah, no. My wish is I want infinite wishes.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know, this is really hard. Galaga, I know that's super basic, but I like that game quite a bit, and it's very satisfying. Like, that is a game that will get me into a flow state quite easily. Yeah,
legit.
There we go. It was Medieval Madness.
Medieval Madness. Okay. Huh. David, how about you?
Yeah, so that's really tough. I feel like overall, I think I've said this before in similar questions. I've always been enamored with the the cocktail table format arcade cabinets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although I feel like, you know, most of the games don't actually do much for me, and like from an artistic standpoint, I think clearly the the pinball type of thing would be where it's at. Mm-hmm. I'd be really tempted to go with I think Twilight Zone on that one.
Twilight Zone's really good, specifically because of the you do not have to maintain it, so you don't have to find those weird little porcelain balls that mm-hmm. are used in the Twilight Zone.
Wait, and what? Then,
I believe it's the Twilight Zone table where, so it uses magnets under the table, which will attract or manipulate the regular steel pinballs. But it includes porcelain balls or something like that, which do not. I mean, you're just by nature of the material, A, don't respond to the magnets, but also just move very differently than the steel ones.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The you do not have to maintain this caveat is actually a real game changer for it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't know, if I could just get like all of the House of the Dead series in perpetuity into one arcade cabinet, that might be
just five different kinds of guns sticking off of it. Shotguns, submachine guns, everything must go. Yeah. Steven asks, what are you drinking?
Ooh.
I've got a gin and tonic and a bottle of water that I'm alternating between.
I'm drinking water, but I have been on a kick of longboard ale, which is super good.
Huh. It's like a surf theme beer.
It's like or maybe it's longboard lager. Mm. It's from a Hawaiian brewing company, I think.
Mm.
And super tasty.
Nice. Ben?
I'm sadly drinking lime flavored carbonated water.
Why is that sad? That's reasonable.
Well, it's not alcoholic.
Oh yeah.
I just got home.
It's sad because it's not tangerine, which I have discovered is the best bubbly water flavor.
Mm-hmm.
See, I cannot do any of that stuff. It's just way too bitter for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I was at a store with my grandma and she pointed out like a display of LaCroix and she asked, is that any good? I said, yeah, it's good. Soda water.
Why would you lie to someone like that?
because I drink it, you know, like I don't necessarily, like, if I have an option, I don't necessarily get LaCroix because I think it's pretty expensive, but just regular carbonated water is fine. My grandma got it thinking it was pop. Like, I don't think she heard me when I said it was just that. She was like, oh my God, that's awful. Do you want to take that? I was like, yeah, I'm sorry I led you astray, but hey, jackpot, free 11 pack of peach pear LaCroix.
Oh. All right, Steven, just because you asked, I'm going to start drinking something.
Okay.
looking at some good stuff on my cabinet. So I'll update you shortly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately for me, I'm trying to drink less alcohol. So
why is that unfortunate? This is the first time I've had alcohol while we were recording in a while.
Yeah, so I'm trying to do that. So if anyone has any suggestions for non-alcoholic things to drink, definitely be up for that.
Yeah, hit them up in the usual spots.
Yep.
Yeah. Mike says, I just finished replaying Psychonauts and was really pleased by how well it holds up, even the difficulty spike near the end. It's inspired me to revisit the entire Double Fine catalog. Which of what studio's games is your favorite? I think that to simplify this question, it should be like which studio's games is your favorite? Like, you know, to go check this out. So like which studio has the highest hit to miss ratio? I think.
I was just going to say
changing the game.
Yeah, I'm going to say Brutal Legend real quick to the original question. That's easy answer for me.
Oh shit! No, I'm sorry. I totally misread the question. Which of that studio's games is your favorite? I thought like that looked grammatically weird to me, so I thought he was asking something different. Which of that studio's games is your favorite? So Brutal Legend. Why does that?
Yeah, do not deny me a chance to talk about Brutal Legend.
No, you dig that. So, that's not necessarily the held opinion.
Yeah, it was just a ton of fun, and the amount of character in the game was right on. It's just, you know, yeah, maybe not the best executed across all fronts, but it knew kind of the vibe it was going for and mm-hmm. executed it perfectly in every sense of the word. So it was pretty great.
Going off of our story, or rather our multiplayer this week, the Killmaster or whatever is one of my favorite breaking the fourth walls.
No.
Oh, there you go.
I'm going to be basic and say Psychonauts. Although I don't know, I could cheat and say Grim Fandango or Full Throttle Remastered. They didn't make the original one, but they did the updates, so that has to count for something, right? I kind of feel like I want to say The Cave, but I didn't necessarily.
That's my answer.
Yeah, go ahead and talk about The Cave because I can't back it over Psychonauts, but
yeah, I can because I hadn't played Psychonauts, so that's my only justification. The Cave's where you have seven different options of your characters, you pick three of them, and it's kind of like an old 90s type puzzle game. Mm-hmm. Not exactly a point and click adventure because you're still following along the characters.
It's like a puzzle platformer. Like you're moving stuff around and talking to people.
Yeah, and interacting with things. You're picking up items, giving them to other people, that type of thing. So it feels very akin to those types of games in the 90s. And then there's like decent replay value with it. I wish they would have made it like six characters instead of seven, because it's really awkward
to do a complete that third
run through. Yeah. But yeah, it was good puzzling, so it was fun. It had a lot of character. It literally had a lot of characters, but it also had a lot of
Yeah. And looking at their games that they've made, I think that's one of the only ones that they've done that had Ron Gilbert on board. Like, he was the lead developer of that, and he is always a treat. So, yeah.
I think maybe I'm going to be kicked off the network, but I've never played a Double Fine game.
No, I don't think that's necessarily weird. They've got kind of a little bit of a spotty history, even though they've made a bunch of games. Yeah. Do not worry. You are in a safe place.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
If you're ever playing a game, you're like, oh, this is quirky as hell.
Yeah.
There's a good chance that it's a Double Fine.
Wow, this has a lot of style, but like not very much substance. But the substance is there; doesn't necessarily hang together really well. But wow, it has a really good style. Yeah, that's probably Double Fine.
Didn't they do like a game about Russian nesting dolls that got lost to time?
They did. Yeah, it was like an Xbox Live Arcade adventure game called Stacking. That was actually, I understand, pretty good.
Oh.
But again, like, it was more old school than I think the market wanted at the time, but it had a lot of style to it. Yeah. I hear people say good things about Costume Quest that they're playing with kids, but
yep.
Let's do one more. Ollie says, I mentioned Black on PS2 in a recent multiplayer and went back to play it. Criterion did an awesome job in something not in their wheelhouse. With that in mind, is there a game developer you would like to see step into a different genre for a bit, and what would you like? I think Rockstar could make a brilliant puzzle game if they set their minds to it. That was Ollie's answer, not mine. It's a complicated question.
Yeah, I can give one that is foreshadowing for my grind.
Okay.
Which is Jaeger, who did Spec Ops The Line.
Mm-hmm.
Then completely changed genres into do Dreadnought, which was like a capital warship space combat game. Completely different and nothing to do with what had come before, but really, really good in its genre. And now they are changing genres again and doing a game called The Cycle that is a battle royale-esque game. Take a shot, you know. Check your bingo card.
Yeah.
But done in a way that allows you to co-op and makes it more about...
You brought
this
on a recent brief, haven't you?
Well, I got into the alpha. I'm going to talk about it again.
Okie doke.
Suffice to say, and I'll say more in just a bit, every time they've touched a new genre, they've done great things with it. So something tells me whatever approach they have over there is working, and they just should jump into as many new genres as possible.
Yeah. Nice. For me, I would like to see Don't Nod take on a traditional horror game. I know that Vampyr has has horror elements, but it was more of an action RPG kind of deal. Having recently replayed Life is Strange and having seen kind of their knack for surreal imagery, especially in the last chapter, I would like to see them dedicate themselves to that kind of angle. As opposed to just kind of making it out of necessity for needing to reuse assets because of budget reasons. Yeah, I'd like to see Don't Nod make a horror game. Dennis or Ben? Or not Dennis. David or Ben? Okay.
Right now I'm trying to think of what game I would like Playdead or what game I would like Rocksteady to make next. Ooh. And... basically any game, really.
So. you trust those developers implicitly.
Yeah, like as long as those developers could come out with a game that wasn't rushed, if like the work could instantly be done, then I'm fine with anything from them. So
I would love to see their take on the clicker genre.
Which one?
Either of them.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
A Playdead one would be very atmospheric.
Spawn
mind control bugs to shoot at people.
I mean, yeah, and they can click for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
I don't know, because I don't know that there's that many like development studios I explicitly follow. I guess, you know, maybe seeing Obsidian do something action-y would be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And seeing the people that did City of Heroes do anything would be kind of cool.
Anything that isn't.
Oh, man, do they still exist?
That depends on what you mean. The name still exists. They haven't made anything, you know, in any way, you know, kind of sim, you know, with that DNA sense.
Yeah.
So you're hoping that any developer would do something with City of Heroes versus looks like Cryptic Studios, Paragon Studios. There's a couple listed here.
I think they went on to become Paragon Studios. Even just,
you know, not necessarily City of Heroes explicitly, but, mm-hmm. you know, some of that, you know, some of those approaches to what made those games great.
Yeah.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you were not here last time, so
I was not.
I will throw to you first. What have you been playing?
Yeah, so I mentioned it during the multiplayer, so I'll talk about it first. I got in on the alpha of The Cycle, which is the terrible name for, it turns out, a great game.
That is a bad name, isn't it? I didn't think about that, but it is.
Yeah, it's so bad. Especially after like playing it and being like The Cycle refers to the lore of, you're a prospector on a planet that has cycles of storms. And so everyone drops in while the weather is good and tries to do as much mining or collecting, or, you know, finish as many contracts as possible before the weather gets bad enough that you have to evacuate. And it's a great little bit of, you know, making the whole battle royale cycle diegetic, and you know, nothing wrong with it, but there's so many better ways you could name it than by just saying The Cycle.
Yeah, well, I mean, The Cycle also refers to menses, so yes. You know,
someone did not playtest that name, or did not focus group that name.
Again, anytime you want to name anything, just run it across a middle schooler, like,
yeah.
That'll
Well, it's by Jaeger, and maybe Jaeger is, I forget, Danish? Something
German.
Like that?
Yeah, yeah.
They're Germans.
Maybe.
They're German.
Yeah, so maybe The Cycle, like, they're like, yeah, that's great, and they just didn't have the context. But the branding's already there. Like, this name ain't changing.
Right, right.
But that's, again, that name gets in the way of an otherwise wonderful game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is 20 players at a time drop onto a map. A very large map with resources dotted throughout. Unlike any other battle royale genre, you do not have any agency over where you fall. Your drop pod hits where it hits. And you can see that marked on the map ahead of time, but you can't change it. But randomly throughout the map, contracts spawn every single time. And those contracts are all things that would drive people together. So, hey, get a certain amount of this resource, but it's all clustered in one place, so everyone's naturally going to be going there. Or hang on to this item, but once you pick it up, it's going to mark you on the map for everyone else who's looking for that type of item. Yeah. Or cap these vents to collect gas, natural gas coming out of the ground. But everyone else can kind of quickly take those over if you're not defending them, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of natural conflict, but the time to kill in the game is extremely long right now. If you do die once, you get a free kind of respawn one time before you're out for good. And really, killing another player rewards a minimal amount of resources. Like, there is a reward for it, but it's minuscule compared to taking objectives. Even more so, like, in Overwatch, you win by taking objectives, but kills are even less impactful in The Cycle than they are in Overwatch. So the focus, scoring-wise, is very much on these objectives. In addition, if you're playing solo, when you see another player, you actually can press a button to invite them to your team. And you can team up with one other player to turn a solo game into a duo game. And I would say out of 15-ish games played, maybe even more than that, I only had two instances where I offered a friendship to another player and they turned it down.
Hmm.
So the cooperativeness, at least right now, is very high. And that's because you can earn way more resources way faster by having multiple people on your team. It's also super interesting in the way that a round ends, because the storm starts getting worse, but does not shepherd you into places in the map. There's no like closing rings. The endpoint is always in the center of the map. There's a landing pad that you've got to get to. So you always drop somewhere way far out on the edge. The endpoint is always in the center, and the objectives kind of get more intense and more dangerous the closer to the center you go. So it's almost a choose your own difficulty. You can skirt around the edge of the map, try to take a bunch of small objectives. You can dash towards the middle for the tougher objectives, also knowing that there's likely to be more players on them. But at a certain point, after I forget how many minutes, the dropship, the escape pod, starts arriving. And at that point, you have to clear off the landing pad, and the escape pod will not arrive until you clear the landing pad of monsters. And so it's this incredible dance of like you and all these other players are around the landing pad. You need to clear it out, because at a certain point you start taking damage because the storm is getting so bad. But you know, you also, everyone is kind of trying to kill each other and the monsters, but if you only focus on killing each other and not the monsters are going to get you, and the escape pod will never show up. So and you kind of have to work together.
Yeah.
And so it's all this like really, really, fun tension in objectives.
Yeah.
And it creates those moments of like working together, even though you don't want to, that you like see in the movies, and it just, it feels really cool. It also, yeah, it also gives you a path to winning that does not include, killing everyone, but you know, you have to get to the escape pod. So I won one game, in my time playing, and it was an amazing experience. The first thing that happened was I kind of got screwed early on and had to, you know, use my respawn, and which zaps you back out to the outside of the map. But on the way back in, I saw that this really powerful monster was spawning. And I was like, you know, it's late in the game. I don't know if anyone else is going to go for it, and I could maybe take it down before it's too late. Which, in fact, I was, just barely. Like, it was probably a solid 5 minutes on my own, felt like 5 minutes on my own, fighting this gigantic monster that I should not have been taking on my own, but managed to take it down. And that awarded me enough stars, like enough contract points, to jump from, I think, seventh or eighth up into first. But okay. At that moment, the storm had gotten bad enough that like, okay, I really need to get out of here. And it was this mad dash to the landing pad. I get to the landing pad. Things are crazy. Monsters are everywhere. People are shooting at each other, at the monsters. And I play this like crazy game of kiting people and monsters around. So I would just I'm not trying to kill anyone. Like I'm horrible at finishing kills. I don't want to do that. I'm the leader, so I certainly don't want to get killed. However, what I would do is like use my sniper rifle to get one good hit off, and then dash through a group of monsters. So if that person wanted to further engage with me, they would have to go through the mob. So they got distracted either clearing out the mob, or they're just like, not worth it. I got other people to fight. And did this great, like, high adrenaline hit and move, like get one hit and change position, you know, slide through here, past these monsters, get to a safe place, get one hit, change position, until the escape pod finally spawned in, made a mad dash through it. Everyone is shooting at me. I get on first and win the game. And it was just like this incredible adrenaline soaked moment where it is not at all dependent on my ability to have the fastest flicks or the best reflexes. Like, it was all about kind of managing the chaos around me in a really cool way that I haven't seen in any other game. So super, super cool.
So here's my question. Is there anything that you get for being, you know, third place, fourth place, for not being like the winner of the round? Or forgive me if you laid this out and I just didn't catch that detail. Is there no such thing as like the one person who like, yeah, this is my round.
Yeah. There's a winner. But then you get rewarded with materials for based on how you place.
Okay.
So you get a certain number of victory points based on the contracts that you complete and then how you did versus everyone else.
Yeah.
That allow you to craft better weapons persistently over time.
Okay. So there's a long-term benefit to being a supportive player who doesn't necessarily make it to the finish line.
You've got it. And so, yeah, you could be like, you know what? I'm just going to go grind low-level contracts the entire time. And just try to engage with another human as minimally as possible.
Right.
At a certain point, just the scarcity of contracts will probably drive you together. But You can totally just kind of ride out a match, not kill a ton of people, and still probably do all right for yourself as long as you're consistently taking objectives.
Yeah.
And then you can use the materials that you get to then craft better weapons. I'm worried about that piece of it. It's so new. It's just in these alpha playtests on weekends right now, mm-hmm. where no one's got the meta figured out.
Yeah.
Once you realize what the most powerful weapon is, or once the community decides, everyone's just going to be doing a mad scramble to craft that. And there's a mechanic going on right now where you pick which corporation you are sponsored by, and you get kind of discounts or bonuses towards the weapons that they are in charge of, I guess.
And then there's going to be the dump corporation.
Yeah, exactly. And so whatever, you know, whoever lucks into having been grinding for that corporation already is going to get the meta weapon a lot faster than someone who ground on the dump corporation. And now suddenly has to do an about face. So that's going to cause some frustration, but they'll iron that out as they develop the game, I guess. No real technical errors that ruined the game to speak of, even though it's an alpha. There was a couple places where like an icon on the screen showed up for longer than it should have, or whatever. Yeah. The ping system is not very good, since, you know, it was whatever 3 weeks ago that everyone realized that a ping system was something that video games have to have.
Satisfactory has one. It's super weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, Portal 2 had one as well, and that was 8 years ago, but.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So, man, was Portal 2 8 years ago?
Yeah, 2011.
Yeah.
Oh, me. Oh, my God. I've been enjoying the cycle, which is a game.
I made someone else feel like a skeleton.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. But super fun. And I'm looking forward to seeing it develop further.
Nice. No, that sounds good. I mean, like, mechanically, like, if you decide to shoot, does the shooting feel good, or are they dissuading you from combat in, you know, like, in kind of mechanical ways?
The shooting is good. The time to kill, like I mentioned, is super high.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, okay, I'm going to start a gunfight with you. I have plenty of time to think about what's going on and also decide if I want to run away.
If I want to stop, can we just call it cool?
That's literally happened where this person started shooting at me. I got the upper hand, and they were like, friend, want to be friend?
Want to party up?
The ping button is just replaced with, you good?
Yeah. We cool. And no, fuck that guy, because he started the fight and then changed his mind.
It's always somebody else's fault with you, Dennis.
Yeah. So you know, the gunplay is great. I constantly feel, and this is probably just because I'm bad at video games, I get someone low and then they get away.
Yeah.
And that is me across all games all the time. In this game, it feels intentional. Whereas the other games, it just feels like I suck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, The Cycle, an ungoogleable, terrible name for a great game.
Yeah. The Cycle game.
It's Steamable though. You can search it on Steam and you'll figure it out what it is. If you can remember the name.
It's also on the Epic Games Store, which is where I have it.
Okay.
And I don't know if they have a preference one way or another. Yeah. It's been an early access kind of couple of weeks for me. I am also playing the early access version of Risk of Rain 2.
Oh, dang. Oh, yeah. Ben, you invited me to play a game of this last night, but I was playing Life is Strange for I was playing that for assignment, so I'm sorry.
Ben, I didn't know you owned it.
Yeah, I got peer pressured into it.
Have you talked about it on the show yet?
I have not.
Nope.
All right, let's do this then. And then I've had another game I was playing with David, and I'll let him kind of carry the torch for that. So I'm sticking to two.
I'll just be over here then. It's fine. Okay. I'm just going to use the restroom. You guys can talk about this. Okay. Bye.
My Risk of Rain too, Cole. Yeah. Okay. Wonderful little roguelike-ish kind of game. The sequel added a dimension. So if anyone played it in 2D, the original version was a hyper-difficult 2D platformer/shooter where you were on this kind of frantic race to get the right upgrades to find a teleporter, activate it, and beat the boss before the waves of enemies became so difficult that they overwhelmed you. And you kind of warped through worlds trying to stay ahead of the curve in terms of upgrades. And that formula is very much intact. It's just translated to 3D. And that translation to 3D works incredibly well. The movement is good. It's all very simple graphics, nothing fancy. But it is really fun to kind of do this almost horde mode shooter, I guess, with really interesting upgrades. They do the Binding of Isaac thing where every upgrade you pick up changes your character model in some way. So like if you pick up sticky bombs, you'll see a belt of sticky bombs. Or if you pick up the missile launcher, there will be a missile launcher mounted on your shoulder and all this other cool stuff. And you can also stack upgrades. So the syringe that gives you a shot speed increase or rate of fire increase, you can get multiple versions of that. And so it just leads to that, again, Binding of Isaac-esque metagame of, okay, how do I create the most broken build possible with the upgrades at my disposal?
Yeah, it's like, how do you lean on the current upgrades that you have?
Mm-hmm. The most interesting thing is there are 3D printers in the world where you can turn in items to create multiple copies of a single item. So there might be, a 3D printer that's printing critical hit increasers, and you can turn in every other item of that level to have it print a copy and another copy and another copy until you're sitting on 5 critical hit increasers and everything fire is a critical hit. But you now have no other items, no healing items, no rate of fire increase items, nothing. But you're a critical hit machine. And so it's like finding the moments to really go all in on that has been interesting for me. And the runs where I've gone super deep have all been kind of lucking into that 3D printer that has something super beneficial.
Oh, that's interesting. I accidentally discovered that, and I didn't know that was a function of it. There was one run through where I was like, all my items got turned into like one or two items. And I'm like, why? How did that happen? Like, I had other stuff here.
It's not well explained.
Yeah, because I thought is there one too that just gives you it takes a random item from you and gives you a random other item, or does that not exist in the game? Because that's what I thought the function of those were, but apparently that's not the case.
Yeah, well, it takes whatever it is a last in first out system with your items.
Okay.
So the item that you give to the 3D printer is always whatever you picked up the most recently.
Hmm. Okay.
And the item that it puts out is you can know. So one half of that equation was true.
Okay. I like the game so far. I just wish the game was done. And I know that it's an alpha or whatever, and they advertise it like that. And again, this is where the peer pressure came in. Is one of my buddies that I play like other stuff with, like Rocket League and stuff like that, picked it up and said it was good. So he encouraged me to try it out, and I did. So I like the game as it is. It is kind of cool to see how, like, even like maybe a week apart, they like already adding in content. You know, there's like different upgrades that were added in, I think, already between the last time I played it and this weekend.
That's cool. Yeah, there's a bunch of slots for items in like the. Tracker for them that are just blank right now, like
coming. Oh, yeah.
So it is exciting to feel like it's going to be updated frequently. They tuned down one of the bosses to be a little easier to beat, the magma worm. It feels, first off, the core gameplay loop feels complete. Like it is not glaringly unfinished to the point that I'm mad that it's out as an early access game.
Yeah.
There's enough there to like be really satisfied with. And so now it's just got kind of a hyper aggressive patching schedule that they're changing the game on.
Yeah. And I don't, what was the original Risk of Rain like? Like, what was like the narrative, or what do you build towards? Is it
very, very similar, just in 2D? So,
okay.
2D and very small sprites and lots of sprites. It was very hard to visually parse.
And that happens too in this game if you get super deep, especially. Like if you go all the way around the horn and kind of restart at the beginning levels, minor spoiler, if you get far enough in the game, you go back to level one, mm-hmm. Just a harder version of level one, which could be a temporary fix for an unfinished game. I'm not sure. But they, at a certain point, you're just holding down your primary fire button towards a wall of enemies that you can't even tell what's in it. And just hoping that you do enough damage to stop the wall before it overwhelms you, and you kind of lose any semblance of strategy. Mm. But at that point, the fun of the game is feeling like, yep, I've created this critical hit machine that's launching 6,000 projectiles a second, and everything explodes. It's a little bit okay in my mind that there's not a ton of high-level strategic play, because that's your, you know, the high level play is your reward for doing the early and mid game well. It mm-hmm. should be a power trip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what you think about that or how far you've gotten.
I mean, I've gotten to the difficulty. I would like something, either some sort of persistence in your progress that you're making, or like some sort of like goal, I guess, to go through eventually. So I think I'll probably enjoy this game a lot more when maybe that's added. I don't know if that'll be added or not, or if the final product's just, you know, like do as many waves as you want. I mean, I guess it'll get better as like they add more content and it's like more varied, I guess, but
enemies that force you to play differently, I think is probably the big thing that it needs right now.
And I think, so right now I only have three of the hero classes unlocked. So I know there's maybe two or three more to still get, but I don't know. The core gameplay I think is good. I think this is a personal thing where it's like, I shouldn't play games that are in early access. And because I usually like to see a completed product.
So I shouldn't invite you to play it after the podcast.
I am going to be playing something else after the podcast, which I will talk about sometime soon.
Yeah, well, I played Risk of Rain 2 with some fellow ducks. So thank you guys if you're listening. It was a wonderful time. Infinitely more fun with multiple people than alone. Yeah. And alone is pretty fun. So I think as a game to kind of veg out and play with some friends, it's great.
Yeah. For as much as I alluded to the original having too small sprites and too many of the sprites, it was kind like unexpectedly easy to fall into a flow state with it, you know, like you did end up kind of figuring out at what pace and kind of in what geometry is the game expects you to move and dodge and stuff like that. Is that the case here?
You can definitely get into a flow, especially, I don't remember upgrades being as frequent in the first game as they are in the second.
Mm-hmm.
Like the map is just littered with upgrade boxes.
Nice.
And so once you get a little money in your bank account, just kind of bouncing around from upgrade to upgrade is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you know, most of the time it's just a box that you open and you get what you get. Some of the time there is a stand of three and you can pick one, and just that little bit of agency keeps you engaged. So you're not completely zoned out. But you just, you know, it's funny, the looting path, I guess, I don't know what to call it, is very reminiscent of what's fun about the early stages of a battle royale game, where you kind of drop in your favorite location and then you kind of have your route that you scramble through to find the loot that you want. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Do you guys do that?
I've not played too many battle royale games, but I can picture really what you're saying.
Genre.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. So you, at least the way I play it, it's like, I know where I want to go, and then I've got this kind of paper route that I just go through to pick up stuff.
No, you're just in the wrong neighborhood, Trendy Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So
why are you laughing?
It's a sense of, hey now. It's a sense of flow that's very akin to that.
Yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which ducks were you playing with?
Let's see. Julia H.
Mm-hmm.
And then another person who I only know by their Steam name. And then someone else was talking about it, but I haven't. I think Dylan H. was talking about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten to play with him yet.
Cool.
Yeah. So wonderful times.
Risk of Rain 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have anything else, Dennis?
No, those are my big ones, although I will talk about one of the things that David talks about.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're better at this than I am.
I was gonna segue to Ben, but what have you and David been playing?
Yeah, well, I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking, so I'm going to try to be as brief as possible.
Carry the show, Dennis.
No. Yeah. Say the name of it. Say the name of it, and then David can pick up.
I feel
up
like I have to do it a certain way, though, so let me just give me a second here.
Oh, is this going to be hurtful?
No.
Is this a pitch?
I hope not. Dennis and David have been playing the Strange Brigade, dropping into waves of horrible mummies to shoot with awesome alliteration.
Ah, yes, so the crack of the bat. The boys of summer out there on the turf and the clay. Yeah.
Yes, the Strange Brigade, which is 100,000,000% better because it has a narrator like that taking you through everything that happens.
Okay, so David.
All kind of dynamic sort of Bastion style.
Nice. So, David, tell me what the Strange Brigade is.
Okay, so... So basically it is Left 4 Dead with you know, funny accents and you know, British, you know, age of adventurism, you know, kind of pulp fiction setting. In particular, at least the initial wave of settings, and they kind of imply that there will likely be expansions in the future, are set in Egypt. And mm-hmm. so you're, you know, basically, you know, blowing away, you know, mummies and, you know, undead, you know, temple guards and stuff like that as okay. you attempt to track down a evil Egyptian queen that's been unleashed on the world.
So only like just a dash of problematic.
Yeah, it's, there's high potential for problematic, yeah. But they handle it reasonably well.
Okay, yeah. I was mostly joking about that, but yeah. Continue.
Yeah, so I do feel like on that front, you know, I think at least, you know, some of it, you know, kind of gets a lot of mileage out of just none of it being at all serious.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's also something to be said for the cast of playable characters being incredibly diverse. So, you know, both in terms of, you know, gender, ethnicity, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Do their abilities, like, can they do different things or
yeah,
does everyone have this? Okay.
Yeah. So each person has a class, and Dennis, I don't know if I've only played the one class and you've played the one class, so I don't know what
your character's class,
like versus mine or whatever.
Class is hyper generous because every character has access to every weapon and every grenade. It's only like what you start with that's unique, and buying the weapon you want is fairly cheap. After
like
two
that.
Play sessions, I was able to buy any weapon in the game. So yeah. That's, you know, that's not a big deal. It is their amulet powers that make them relatively unique. Each character has four, although I would argue that really all the powers kind of do the same thing, just in different ways. So your amulet, as you kill enemies, their souls will kind of float above the ground, which did you guys know that souls are little blue flames? So I'm glad the game has solved that.
I had my suspicions.
Slash faster.
Yeah.
Exactly, you, 21 grams. Yes.
Yeah, if you hold down your primary fire without ADSing, you'll kind of do this. You'll hold out your amulet and pull in the souls.
Hey, Dennis,
to charge your amulet.
Hey, Dennis, what is ADSing?
Aim down sights ing.
Oh, it's iron sights. If you're not iron sightsing,
aing DS, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
Is the proper way to say it. Iron sightsing?
Yeah.
Iron?
Sorry,
yes. I thought it was just a dance move on the WASD.
Yeah, so you can charge up your alt with kills and then unleash a powerful attack that ideally, if you use it right, kills a bunch of enemies all at once, which has this kind of virtuous cycle of spend your alt well and you can pretty much charge it 75% of the way for the next go round because you've killed enough enemies, and you'll get the narrator, you know, commenting on brutal, look how many enemies went down, or something to that effect.
These rapscallions have something up their sleeves.
Yeah, with more alliteration even too.
I think that's though where also though some of the class does differ, because I know, for example, the person I'm playing has some benefits, has some bonuses to his ability to like gather souls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so like he's able to gather them from like a longer distance away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I know there are some stat differences, although I think they're fairly minor.
Yeah, if you're kind of playing well, I don't think you'd notice a difference.
No.
But yeah, the other thing that really sets the game apart is there is a big emphasis on puzzling and co-op puzzling at that, which is hyper unique from any kind of co-op shooter where most people just want to run to the next wave of enemies as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And so a lot of the fun in the game has been kind of you take a short break to play a Pipe Mania puzzle where you rotate pieces by shooting and you kind of work together to connect all the dots, as it were.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
Well, one person has to like go to an area that has a secret code while the other person inputs it from across the map. Or I'm trying to think of other puzzles. Oh, there's floor panels. You have to walk over the floor panels in a certain order, but at a certain point you can't walk any further to hit the right panel. The other person has to kind of step on from a different location. So nothing that holds you up significantly, but a ton of fun and just a great way to have lulls in the action without making the player bored.
Yeah, and similarly, one of the high points for the narrator is each of the levels has lots of collectibles for you to shoot. most notably, a series of cat statues, all of which, when you shoot them, the narrator has various commentary on. You see a dog. We've seen that coming.
Yeah, the narrator hates cats for some unfathomable reason.
That's why he sent you to India. Not India, Egypt. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from.
The first line on it that I noticed something was like off in what the narrator thought about cats. He goes, "You shoot it." He just goes, "I had a cat once." Once.
Oh, narrator, please. That's unfair.
Yeah. he's so chipper all the time that this vitriol is unexpected.
So play this with headphones, Cole, so Greta doesn't hear it.
She's got no idea what the fuck's going on. All she listens to is the fucking snack bag. It's fine.
Fucking snack bag is the name of my ska band.
Continue, sorry.
But it's been great co-op fun.
Yeah. And all the way around, it seems like they've really done a lot with trying to put a ton of emphasis in detail on it. One of the kind of other fun things is there's a ton of different traps and explosive barrels and avalanches and things like that you can trigger in order to take out waves of enemies. There's just compared to most games in this series, there's a ton more to do. Although strangely enough, you're still your only verb is shoot.
Yeah. Huh. Even solving puzzles, you solve them by shooting them. Just in the right way.
It's like that VR game, The American Dream.
One of my favorite commentaries is like, early on you have to, shoot through some barricades. And it's, the Strange Brigade faces their greatest enemy, wood. They will defeat it with the power of bullets, or something like that.
So. This does seem like an excellent upgrade to like Left 4 Dead, where it's not just shooting zombies, but you still have that same like platform to experience that with your friends with.
Yeah, and it's the pace is just a step slower, which that there's not as much franticness.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that, especially because slower moving enemies allow me to apparently become a headshot machine. And this game has some of the best feedback for headshots that I've ever seen.
How so?
Like, not only is there like a the kind of sound cue, there's a literal choir of angels like,
oh, they do some bullet storm shit with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you get kind of on this roll of clicking heads, normally I am not capable of doing. But in this game, I do all right with it. And then after, you know, three or four headshots in a row, your character and the narrator start commenting on how well you're doing. And that feels good as well. So just the feedback loop for getting multiple headshots in a row, even a single headshot is good. Multiple headshots in a row is amazing. And it's a game where you can actually focus in and get them with some measure of reliability without being a ninja style god at video games.
Yeah.
Well, and I think depending either on a combination of what character you're playing and what weapon you're using, certain weapons or characters, actually, when you get a headshot, the enemy will explode and it almost becomes like a crowd control mechanic.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah. So that was when I was playing... there's one match where I was playing as the Indian woman, and I believe that's one of her advantages.
Oh, cool.
And I think that kind of a little bit dovetails into the other gameplay thing. As you mentioned, it's slower paced. I think some of that is it seems like the game really emphasizes sort of maneuverability and kind of kiting. So for example, every character has a role, dodge ability that you can fairly consistently spam to like move through crowds of enemies.
Okay.
And so it creates a thing where a lot of, success in the game revolves less around like Dennis said, being super good at headshots or like the Left 4 Dead thing where it's all about like maintaining volume of fire on a horde. Right. And it becomes more about like intelligently, doing hit and runs and, herding enemies into traps and, AoEs and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like weirdly technical for this kind of game.
Yeah,
there is like understanding how a horde AI moves can be hugely beneficial if you manage it right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. And that seems like one of the exciting things about Days Gone. Yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it really seems like a number of the enemies I feel like almost are less different in. I guess in actually being different enemies than they are in their movement style and kind of their horde style.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there's, certain enemies that sort of have like a short range, teleport and will much more explicitly chase after you, or like other enemies will, just kind of do the zombie horde thing, like, things like that. So there's mm-hmm. definitely, senses in which you have to learn the different strategies.
Yeah.
And I should say this is by the developer that did Sniper Elite.
Oh, Rebellion, yeah.
Rebellion, yeah. And so they know how to make gunfire feel good.
Well, specifically shooting somebody in the head.
Yeah. Yes.
It's also, did you notice that one of the characters is a not so subtle reference to the Sniper Elite character?
No, I haven't played those games, so I trust you on it.
It's like in Sniper Elite, your main character is like Carl Fairburn. Or something, and in this one of the characters is like Ken Fairburn or something like that, and he's the like sniper archetype.
Mm-hmm. Nice. No, I've never played any of their games, but looking at like the DLC or some of the scenarios for the previous Sniper Elite games, they had been messing around with doing something fantastical like this for a while, and to kind of go whole hog on this pulp fiction fantasy kind of setting, it's cool to see them able to do that.
Yeah, this feels like a passion project. Like it feels like the thing that they always talked about doing that they just are so in love with the idea of, and the execution shows that.
Nice. into it.
It seems awesome. I'm going to get it as soon as it drops in price.
Yeah.
It was on, I'm so sorry. It was on sale for 70% off a week ago. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah, it's spicy deals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'll throw it on my wish list and get it the next time it drops like that.
Get notifications. Yeah. What else have you been playing, David?
So I've been continuing on with, you know, Division 2 Divide Harder.
Division 2 I'm, Square Root.
Exactly.
Division 3 Divide by 0.
What's that, David?
I'm up to World Tier 3, which basically the way it works is, you know, once you beat the primary campaign, it basically, you know, the entire world resets in terms of like enemy difficulty and to what they call World Tier 1. And then, you know, as you make your way through the end game, basically periodically you go up a world tier and it's kind of just everything across the board does a jump in difficulty.
Hmm.
And so there's five world tiers, and I'm just about ready to take on the mission to advance to the fourth one. So that's, I don't know, that's kind of fun. It's, you know, it's very much now in the end game, the, you know, just kind of run fairly similar missions, but, you know, with more over-the-top abilities and harder enemies and, you know, those sorts of things. However, they do introduce a new faction after the game ends that are called the Black Tusk. They're basically mercenaries, and they're kind of interesting in that they have access to a lot of the same technology that you do. So as you're fighting them, they'll be like sending out drones and you know, robots and things like that after you.
Hmm.
So that really changes up the gameplay a lot, and fighting them tends to emphasize a much more tactical approach. So, you know, a lot of their technology can, you know, really mess you up, but at the same time, it often will have like weak points you can attack to take it out very easily.
Okay.
So that's kind of fun. I'm trying to think, you know, other than that, not really too much to say. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting watching, just within the, I guess kind of the macro of the game or the meta of the game, they're very much getting through some of their growing pains. Most notably, a lot of the weapons that are like class specific meant to be ultimate weapons are almost completely useless.
As happens, yeah. Epic weapons tend to do that, yeah.
Yeah, so there's things like, and, you know, all of them have extremely limited ammo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of interesting. So as example, I've only had one exotic weapon drop, and it's basically a shotgun that... its special ability is it does increase melee damage and gives you a buff if after you melee the enemy, you then like immediately kill them. The only problem is if you're close enough to melee someone and they're not dead when you're done melee them, you're almost certainly not going to survive. So it's there's definitely some things they need to maybe rethink. So hopefully they kind of learn from it or are able to improve.
Yeah. Do you know, have they publicized their roadmap? Like, are they going to bring more content in? I mean, obviously they are, but like, is it on a scale that will like keep you coming back? Or are you just kind of gonna let this one fade?
Yeah. So they've definitely have a roadmap. They just released basically, each of the factions has the enemy factions has their home base. That's kind of the ultimate, mission for them. And they tend to be, more extreme set pieces. So, for example, the one that has stood out so far is the True Sons, which are kind of the alt-right militia type of group.
Okay.
Basically, their faction base is the Capitol building, and the way you raid it is, some of your allies basically like launch smoke bomb mortars onto the field in front, and you then have to basically charge across the mall while under artillery fire before the smoke dissipates and they can actually start specifically targeting you.
Intense.
Yeah, so it's really, really cool. And, having fight outs like on the top of the rotunda and, things like that are just really neat. And so they just released the kind of faction base for this endgame faction I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They've talked about that future releases are potentially going to emphasize some of the areas kind of around DC.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be very interesting, especially depending on like how far you how far out they take you. Because, for example, Baltimore is already, a post-apocalyptic dystopia. So I'd be interested to see it looks like after the disaster.
Baltimore is already a failure of the system, yes.
Right, exactly. What I'd really love to see is actually in the, Fallout New Dawn or Far Cry New Dawn. Well, which also could be Fallout New Dawn in this case. one of the things they added was basically missions where for like a single mission, you'll say like, jump on a helicopter and get flown out to like see what Japan's like in the apocalypse, for example. And I think they could do some really interesting things with that in The Division with, kind of doing some... greatest ofs of, various landmarks.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, setting, a mission on Alcatraz maybe or something like that.
Yeah. I get that Assassin's Creed heat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, So it's pretty good stuff. It, continues to just be stupidly, over the top. So, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. That's everything. Ben, how about you?
I got something I can include you in, Cole. I got two things I can include you in.
Oh, cool.
So the first one, I've continued playing Baba Is You. That game's really good. It's shifting its way up to being one of the best puzzle games I've played in a long time.
It's really good.
Yeah, it is. I convinced one of my friends to play it over the weekend, who's streams. So I got to watch him play it for a little bit.
So you got to watch him feel very dumb for not seeing something that somebody should feel is very obvious. Yeah.
No. I mean, the first levels aren't that bad. I eventually got that feeling. Yeah. When he got to like world like two or three, but
yeah.
the first, you know, the first world, like, fun to watch people, like, understand what the game's doing.
Yeah.
So I've gotten, I think I've gotten to every world. I've, like, 100%ed a few of the worlds. And I've quote-unquote beat the game, but there's, like, more stuff to do, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm kind of, like, at the point where I'm kind of exploring some dusty corners. There's a few, like, really good gems in that game, though. So, like, keep playing it. I think there's some cool stuff with it. Yeah.
I'm having a real good time with it. Have we talked about me playing Papa as You, or had I said I was going to play it? What?
We talked about it on when you were streaming, because I suggested you play.
Oh, yeah.
You promptly denied me of that.
No, I'm not going to stream that because I don't want, I mean, there's already enough proof of how dumb I am on the internet. Like, I don't want to confirm more than I need to.
No. But I think you're tapping into something where I think I had something similar where a lot of the puzzles you'll solve while you're not playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you like, cause like it does a good job of not, gating you, where it's like you have to solve this puzzle or you can't progress. Like, it gives you a lot of options. Like, even the worlds that they have, it branches out, so it's like, oh, I can try this world, or I can go to this one, or I can do this one, you know. So it lets you kind of do the puzzles that you want to do. So at any given time, you might have like 4 or 5 or 6 different puzzles that are open. And so you can kind of, once you, it takes like maybe like 5 or 10 minutes to like see, like, okay, this is the puzzle, here's the mechanics, like, here's what's going on in the level, here's what I think like the first step might be to solving it or whatever, but I'm definitely not there or whatever. And then, like, so then a lot of times when you're not playing the game, you might think of a level and be like, oh, I wonder if I can do this, and then, right, like, you'll come back and try that.
It's a game, yeah, that feels specifically designed to create those moments, because I mean the mechanics are relatively complicated, but you know, this is the game where the actual logic of the game is represented as blocks you can push around, and you can change, yeah, what different objects do. So the entire, I mean, at least so far that I've seen, the entire like secret of this is that it kind of forces you to constantly reframe what is inside, what is outside, and what is the box, you, mm-hmm, know. And like, sometimes that change in perspective only arrives with distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I set myself up really well to play this, because I played it when I was traveling. Like, I was like, okay, I'm gonna be going to Milwaukee and I want to have something to mess with in the hotel, and I just got that and messed around with it there. I'm like on world 3 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm probably hitting about 1 or 2 puzzles a night, honestly. And mm-hmm, the worst thing that you can do is force yourself to try to complete a world when like something new opens up. Like, the first puzzles of that world are not necessarily going to be harder than the puzzles of the worlds that are already open to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just usually throwing more words at you or more mechanics at you,
right?
You
know? Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or forcing you to question more assumptions about the, yeah, way this particular, like, I mean, it's like syntax, the way the syntax works, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I was watching my other friend play too, I started going back through the worlds, like the first world and the second world and stuff, and started trying to like 100% them, because in addition to the regular puzzles that are in a world, they'll have iterations as well, where it'll be like a more difficult puzzle where it's like, okay, here's how you solve this puzzle the first time. Now I'm going to remove this element. You can still solve the puzzle, but how do you, yeah, do it? You know?
There are a couple of those where it's like the same geometry of the map, but it just kind of goes deeper and deeper. I love those.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were fun to do as well. Yeah. I don't have too much more to say about it outside of that. It's really good though. Maybe at a certain point I would like to watch you stream it.
Yeah.
Cause there's some moments of the game that I'd like to watch you play, but, mm-hmm, I don't know. Well, maybe, yeah, we'll get there. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah.
Maybe I will get confident enough. And like, I'm mostly playing it up for comedy. Like, oh yeah, this game
is, yeah,
it makes me look like a dummy. I think that mirrors a lot of people's, kind of experience with it, because it is a game that requires you to, you know, learn its language again, quite literally its syntax. No,
I tried streaming it a couple of times too, and it's just mostly me staring at the computer screen. So it, right, it is, I, I was very sensitive about that. It's just like, yeah, this cannot be entertaining.
It's I mean, like, it's so the level at which it's satisfying is not a level at which you could stream it, right? Like, for me, I've got it on the Switch, which means I can just kind of fire it up and play, you know, play for about like 10 minutes at a time while I've got a YouTube video on in the background, right? You know, like, if I was sitting down to stream, you know, I'm gonna, you know, the minimum time that I want to stream is like an hour and a half, right? And that would just lead to me hitting my head against it, which is not what it feels like this game wants you to do.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. All right, I got one more game I want to talk about, though.
Okay.
So I recently, I finished setting up my living room, quote unquote, or at least I set up a TV in my console so I can play like console games now. Okay. Once again.
All right.
And so I am playing Call of Cthulhu. Shout out to my cousin Kevin, who lent me the game to play.
Oh, dang.
Before I moved. Yeah, I'm only two levels through. I'm on the third one. It's very janky, but it's pretty fun. Yeah. Or at least so far I like it. Yeah, it feels similar mechanically to something like Knights of the Republic, where it's like, walk around this like world, talk to a bunch of people, you'll have like some crossover missions, you know, that'll send you around this place.
Yeah.
Let me preface by saying this is nowhere near as good as Knights of the Republic.
Right.
But it's like,
it is much more modest than any Star Wars product could ever hope to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're trying. They're trying, God bless them.
They're just playing it in a different space, and it's laudable to work at a different scale, right?
Yeah, and I mean, but like all the similar mechanics are there. They give you like a character. You have an upgrade system at the beginning where you get to choose what skills you want to invest in. Mm-hmm. I think they try and reinforce that in mechanics around the world and like and with your interactions with people. Yeah. I did like kind of look up like a character building guide to like see which ones I could avoid and like not worry about, the first one through.
Is the dump corporation? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's like, it seems like most of them or like half of them were like dump stats where it's like, yeah, you don't need to put any stats in this the first time through. Just do these. But even still, it's fun so far. I want to keep playing it. I know that there's supposed to be kind of like a bad stealth system that gets implemented soon that I haven't experienced yet.
That's requisite for a Cthulhu game on a console. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it sounds right. But yeah, no, it's, I think it's fun so far as, I mean, the graphics are surprisingly passable.
Yeah. The voice acting is really good. Like surprisingly good given the budget of the game. I mean, this game.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I've already noticed lines that you can tell were added in afterwards or that are like maybe done by a different person.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I wish that I didn't have that, like, okay, so wish I didn't have is really strong, but I definitely have like I'll just ignore that. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, I do too.
It's just a little airborne. It's still good. Right. Like I've got that for a number of things, but like things related to, we just get so few directly Call of Cthulhu or Lovecraft related stuff that like, I don't know. Like I can't afford to turn my nose up at any of it because who knows when the next one's coming.
Right. I mean, there's still a lot of good things on it. You can walk into a bar and hear people singing songs about the great catch from 80 years ago. And you see a mutilated whale on shore. It's great.
The investigation is so good. Like, it rewards you for like poking around in people's drawers and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it teaches you real life skills.
Teaches you to snoop.
It seems fun so far. I mean, the thing that I care about most is like, you put yourself in a world, as long as you're reinforcing whatever stats you put stuff into, as long as there's like plenty of things to explore, then it feels good.
There are lots of escape hatches built into it, right? Mm-hmm. Where like, even if you kind of fuck yourself by picking mostly useless stats, they give you a way through.
I do. Yeah, in the guide that I was reading, it said like pretty big at the top, there is no combat system in this game. Don't worry about strength. And I'm like, oh, okay, sweet.
Which is like, it's super confusing, right? Because if you don't walk into this knowing the kind of just the way that the Chaosium Call of Cthulhu role-playing game works, that like you're not adventurers, you're investigators. If you don't walk into it knowing that like combat is going to be super de-emphasized or entirely removed, you might kind of like leave yourself at a disadvantage if you approach it like any other tabletop based thing, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of on them. Like they should have 8 different skills and then not like balance them, you know.
And like as much as the fact that it is stat based is kind of a differentiator. Sorry, Greta, I'm not going to pay attention to you. As much as the stat system is a differentiator, it's not necessary. And so like they can justify the license by being like, you know, this is a Chaosium published game. They can just, you know, justify it by saying like, yeah, we're that, and we can just tell that story, not mechanically, right?
There is a cool thing that they have where the starting stats that you have are not the same for each of the traits. They kind of start off staggered all over the place.
Yeah.
So like your investigation is already pretty high. I think it's like starts at 40, but there's a occult, which is like your knowledge of like the crazy Cthulhu stuff. Yeah, that like starts out at 0.
Yeah. Mythos knowledge. Yeah. You're supposed to be a guy who's kind of brought to this island community in the Northeast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, dude, Cthulhu stuff. It's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
I don't know. Based on my output, I think you could say I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like if you accuse me
gotta
of it.
Get them Eldritch Horrors.
Yeah. I fucking love it. Like just I read the Malleus Monstrum when I go to sleep. Like it's good stuff. So I couldn't defend myself from that accusation. So
yeah. So That is what I'm going to be playing after the podcast is over, though.
Nice, nice. Yeah. It's a good mystery, too. Like, I haven't finished it, but, like, I'm super intrigued about what's going on that island.
Cool. Yeah. It's, I mean, this, usually, like, I have a harder time getting into D&D, but, like, this type of mythos or whatever, like, I'm all for. Like, I'm totally into it, you know?
Theming matters.
Yeah. And it seems similar to the board game that we played, Dennis, the Mansions of Madness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the by, I now have the Lord of the Rings version of that, which we're just waiting to find the night to.
Oh shit!
To
play. You were talking about that, weren't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to hear about that.
Journeys in Middle Earth. Haven't played it yet, but I have the game, read the rule book, and it seems very similar.
All right, let me book a ticket.
Nice, only man. If you brought mustaches for Cthulhu, what would you bring for Lord of the Rings?
Sideburns.
Swords. nothing. What? Nothing.
good luck traveling with that.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
Yeah. So Baba Is You was one of mine. Otherwise, it's going to be real short. I've continued playing Satisfactory. I have hit up on what is available. I've hit up on the limits of what's available in this patch.
Cole, tell me about the ping system in Satisfactory.
I mean, I'm playing it single player, so it is something that activates and replaces my left click, and I get real frustrated by it. Satisfactory is real good, y'all. I put about probably like 50 hours into it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, no, it's real. Like this is definitely like falling like straight into the Stardew Valley.
I like Stardew Valley. Yeah,
anything but. Like I put 120 hours into Stardew Valley over the course of like a month. It was not healthy. It falls into like the Stardew Valley / Frostpunk kind of valley for me. It's real good. I am kind of resigned to the fact that I'm going to follow its development.
Mm-hmm.
So Satisfactory is the 3D first person kind of take on Factorio. Where you have landed on an alien world and you are kind of tasked with exploiting its resources by building a factory out of different kind of materials that you find, and you unlock different technologies by tiers and stuff. I have reached the point where I have the fastest conveyor belts that I can get, and I've built like geothermal generators so I can decommission all my coal generators so that coal can go to making steel, and that steel can go to making superior structural elements, and I can take that and also use oil to make plastic and rubber so I can make kind of circuits and advanced computer components. So I can make manufacturers that will take three plus ingredients to make new stuff. And I have found a layout that is perfectly modular. So if there are any bottlenecks or if there are any shortages, I can just build up new levels of stuff because this is 3D in order to make sure that there is a perfect flow of resources into my manufacturers and expand that apace and also go about this gigantic world that is here and find new resources and new nodes and build the conveyor belts that will send the resources back or build trucking lanes that will bring oil or whatever from place to place in order to keep things humming so that whenever the new patch drops, I can adjust my factory to make whatever it needs to make. Nice. It is constant optimization. It is constant mistake fixing. And it is constant reevaluation of any assumptions that I had about what would be efficient given the way that these things kind of fit together.
I think you just described existential dread.
No. I described the way that I live. And if you categorize that way, then I have a lot of questions to answer. No. It's really good. At this point, like I'm sitting down and playing it probably like 20 minutes at a time. And it's like, all right, I quit the game. And I think I've got a real bottleneck at the screws. I need to find a way to get more screws because I need more reinforced plates. All right. So to get more screws, I need more iron rods. To get more iron rods, I need at least like one more steel. I need at least one more iron node. So I need to go find one and build the miner and then like link that into the smelter that will give me more. Oh, that smelter's maxed out. Well, I need to build a new smelter and then build a conveyor belt balancer that will kind of deliver the right amount to whatever I need. Right.
Man, God help you as updates come in for this game.
I'm super looking forward to it. So the roadmap has a new update coming out like later on this month. So like realistically, like within a week or so, and they're gonna bring whole new tech trees and stuff, and like the conveyor belts that I have, like the weird conveyor ladders that I've got going on, like the coiled pigtails of conveyor belts to like raise and lower resources and the stuff that I produce, like that can be replaced with these higher level like straight up conveyor elevators that I build. Recently, like just in the stuff that they shipped, they recently gave me the ability to build programmable splitters. So I was able to like rip and replace a good number of my infrastructure with these splitters. You know, again, the stuff that would take an input and then split it based on what's on the input, sending like this resource that way and that resource that way, et cetera. I could replace all of those with like the smarter infrastructure, letting me compact it and build it more vertically as I want to. Right. So I'm super happy to be on this curve where they're releasing stuff roughly at like, 1 month after the other, where I can refactor it as opposed to, being on this curve later where all this stuff is apparent to me. Because if they were not causing me to rebuild stuff, I could see it getting kind of boring.
Sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Satisfactory is a really good game, guys.
This is like game number 3 that's in alpha that I will get when it finally releases in earnest. Yeah.
Give in, Ben.
I have no idea when it's going to come out. It's Epic Store only, so like that information is not necessarily apparent. Their current roadmap takes them at least 3 months out. So I could see them not releasing the full on even beta version until this year. But however, what I will say is, I mean, I've gotten 50 hours out of this and it is stable. It works. I've not really run into any kind of like bug that ends the game necessarily for me. Satisfactory is really good. I would not just, like if anybody has that optimization bug, if somebody played Factorio, if somebody played Stardew Valley and ignored the message of that game that you don't necessarily have to optimize everything, this will probably speak to you. And I need more people to play this so I don't feel bad about being hooked. So if you could do that, then that would be fantastic.
Go to twitch.tv/satisfactory.
I thought about streaming it. I thought about showing off my factory. Should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a factory tour, but that might invite in safety violations, having that many people there.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of railings. OSHA. Yeah, there's no real OSHA compliance going on. What I'm worried about is somebody saying, oh, no, you could totally do this in half the space that you have. You just have to, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, oh, fuck.
You've never even played this game.
This is my goddamn week, isn't it? Fuck! Satisfactory is really good, y'all. and that's all I've been playing. Any questions about that?
No, that's good stuff.
Yeah. David?
Nope.
Cool. Ben?
I will end with, I would rather play a release Call of Cthulhu than an alpha functional game. And I don't know why. It's just a personal preference.
No, I get it. If Satisfactory was not so specifically built to be a trap for me, I would definitely let it lie. But it is. I get it. Cool. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. If you came out last weekend and saw me at the Midwest Gaming Classic, thank you so much. I was super happy to meet you. If you didn't come out last time, come out next time. Watch for the announcements about that as it goes. Otherwise, keep in mind, we're going to be messing with the format a little bit as time goes forward. But it shouldn't mess with your expectations too much. All the same people, all the same stuff. And as usual, I want to make a renewed call for people to leave us ratings or reviews. I know it sucks if you're not in the Apple ecosystem to go and do that. Even if you're in the Apple ecosystem, it sucks to engage with the Apple ecosystem. However, that is the biggest source of our downloads, and positive reviews do raise our profile on that. So if you have nice things to say about us, or if you don't, but if you have nice things to say about us, consider going to the Apple podcast directory and leaving us a positive review. Otherwise, we're going to be around. We'll be back next week. All that stuff. Am I forgetting anything?
Sounds good to me.
All right. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. You all do not have to do the entire URL if you decide to say your Twitch names. Continue.
I've been Dennis Furia. I am GreenLaser73 on Twitch. It's mostly Devil May Cry 5 right now, which I did not talk about, but am very much enjoying.
Nice.
I am the once in future David on Earth right now.
And I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. I'm sorry if I'm kind of sloppy tongued. That gin got up under me. So, yeah. So I've got some
enough
for you.
Enough to where you're going to play Risk of Rain 2 with me now.
No, I'm going to play Satisfactory because I've got a Jones, man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You guys and your other video games that you like.
Yeah. So I got some for you. Some titles here. Reverse Hearthstone. Kiting People. Dump Corporation.
Yep.
Dance Move on the WASD. The Fucking Snack Bag.
Hey, Greta.
And...
Hey, Greta, is it a title?
No, it's not. Sorry. I'm just saying hi to my lovely, lovely girl. The final one here, Clicking Heads.
Clicking Heads.
Yeah.
Nice.
Who's got stuff?
I have four.
Okay.
So I too had the Dump Corporation and Reverse Hearthstoned.
Okay.
I also have Just the Facts podcast, ma'am. And a dash of Problematic.
One second here.
So the only thing I had is the Reverse Hearthstone.
I actually start and stopped with Reverse Hearthstoning as well.
Okay. So by the votes, that kind of has to be it, right?
Is it reverse Hearthstoned, reverse Hearthstoning? I can talk, I promise.
I like reverse Hearthstoning.
Cool.
Yeah. No, but by the votes, if it's unanimous like that, then it has to be. So
love it.
Cool. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to play with my cat because she has not had her laser pointer time yet. I'm going to play some Satisfactory. No, she's got to have it or else she doesn't sleep. So, yeah. Cool. It's been good talking with you guys.
Yeah. Good hanging out.
Y'all.
Yeah.